Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. This is episode 301, and I didn't think I was going to be able to get 301 out for a few weeks, but I have this opportunity right now to get it out, and it's being released on its regularly scheduled time on Sunday mornings, which is when I like to put these out. I know there's been a little bit of a change lately, but anyway, I had some listener voicemails come in, and so that's what I want to talk about. As a matter of fact, there's three voicemails, but it got me thinking about some good topics to talk about. So I appreciate these listeners calling these in, and I encourage all of you guys to call in some voicemails. I've received a lot of voicemails on this show, and I appreciate that, because it gets me thinking about topics, and of course, hopefully it gets you some fairly decent answers, although I don't have all the answers, but hopefully you enjoy some of the stuff that I put out. Now, before I get into that, I want to say a thank you to all of you. This past month, the month of October, has been a record-setting month on my Amazon store. Thank you very much. I've received more orders than I have since I have started the program. So your support has been fantastic. Thank you. Please keep it up. If you want to support my show without spending any extra money, I mean, after all, you're going to make the purchase on Amazon anyway. Please go to handgunworld.com. And there is an Amazon store page there with a direct link. And you can save that link, bookmark that link, do whatever, and always use that page whenever you make your Amazon purchases. I get a little bit of a commission for that. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. I want to thank all of you very much. You know, there's a lot of different ways to support this show, which I've talked about it, but that's one of the easy ways for you to do it that doesn't cost you any extra money. So, okay, let's get into the listener voicemails here real quick. And I'm probably going to have some fairly lengthy comments on each one. So let's go ahead and take the first one.
Hi, Bob. This is Doug in Savage, Minnesota. And I was wondering to know your opinion or advice on the best way to get multi-state concealed carry permits. I was on a couple of different trips here recently and looking at my destinations, and it seems that my Minnesota permit is not accepted in where I was going. And I know you travel a lot, so I thought you might have some advice on how you go about getting multi-state permits. What's the most efficient way? Is there two or three states that you get and covers most of the country? And when you do that, how do you go about actually getting from each of those states? Is it a process of mailing in your information, your expenses to each of those, and it's a one-by-one type of thing, or how does that work? So hope you can give me some advice on that. Keep up the good work on the podcast. Just listen to episode 300. You're sounding great, like you have much more energy than maybe you had in the past. Hope your recovery is going well, and wish all the best to you and your family. Thanks, Bob. Hope to hear from you soon. Bye.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for calling in. You know, I didn't know where Savage, Minnesota was. So I had to look that up, and I see it's just south of the Twin Cities. And so that's great, and thanks for calling in. I appreciate that. And it looks like you're over there by Burnsville. Anyway, I got some family in the Twin Cities, way up north of the Twin Cities. But anyway, and by the way, my family, they're still cheeseheads, but they happen to reside in Minnesota. So I won't make any more comments about that. They're Wisconsinites, and, you know, hey, us Wisconsinites, once we are one, we always stay one, but probably just like Minnesotans stay Minnesotans. Anyway, Doug, one of the best resources that I can recommend to you to answer your question is handgunlaw.us. Now, before I get into that, let me explain to you why I think it's very important to have more than one concealed carry license. You hit on the first one. If you do some traveling, you may find that your concealed carry license in your state does not cover you in some of the states that you go to. At one time, I had two non-resident concealed carry licenses. I had a Florida non-resident concealed carry license, and I had a Utah non-resident concealed carry licenses. Now, there are a lot of states now that offer non-resident licenses. Even Texas offers non-resident licenses. If you go to handgunlaw.us, handgunlaw.us, you will have a plethora of knowledge there that will tell you where you can get non-resident licenses and what states offer them and everything. I've had Gary Slider, the owner of the website handgunlaw.us. I've had him on my show many times. If you go back and listen to some of the older shows. But yeah, let's see, there are, it looks like, about 29 states offer non-resident permits or licenses. And I think that's pretty cool. Now, the reason I chose Florida and Utah is because they had very wide coverage, especially Utah. So what I would suggest you do is pull up a list off of handgunlaw.us, handgunlaw.us, pull up a list of where Minnesota is accepted, and then pull up a list of Utah, Florida. You might want to check, let's see, well, you might want to check Texas, because we cover a lot. You might want to check out, I would say, Indiana maybe. Check out some of those and compare them to where you are. Now, I would strongly suggest Utah and Florida. That's going to give you a pretty wide coverage if you have all three of those. And you can do them by mail, by the way, especially Florida and Utah. There is a catch with Utah, a little bit of one. You can get by that easy, but it's not that hard. But definitely get a Florida. I would say definitely check into Florida and check into Utah. Compare their coverage with your coverage, and then you'll be able to see how much coverage you can get, where you can be accepted to be able to carry your handgun in multiple different states. You can do it all online and by mail, which is the cool thing. Now, with respect to Utah, to get a Utah non-resident license, you have to take a class from a Utah certified instructor. But that's easy. That's easy. It's a pretty easy class to take. And what's really cool, I looked it up. If you go on handgunlaw.us and click Utah, there's a website you can go to that shows you a listing of all of the instructors that are certified to teach the Utah class. And Minnesota has a lot of them. Matter of fact, Texas only has a handful of them, but Minnesota has a lot of Utah instructors. Utah CHL, or they're not called CHL, but Utah Concealed Weapons License instructors. So you got to sit through their class. I think it's like a 4-hour class or whatever. It's not that hard. And my Utah license is still active. As a matter of fact, when I went to Washington to teach the class, when Ben and I went up there to teach the class with Glenn Tate and the rest of his team over at Fort Discovery, my Utah non-resident was good in Washington. My Texas resident was not good in Washington, so I could carry when I was there. But Ben couldn't. He didn't have a Utah license. So anyway, do that. With Florida, I don't think you have to take a class. I think if you send in a copy of your Minnesota license and you meet the criteria and you fill out their application and it's like $112, I think you're good. It might take them 90 days to get you a license, but all they want to see is that you've got some certified training. I think if you take an NRA class, I think some people, if all they have is an NRA class or something like that, even if they don't have a license from their own state, they can take an NRA class and send that in, and Florida's going to be good with that. Some people actually do that. Now, I'm not a big fan of that. They'll do that without getting a permit from their home state. I'm not a big, huge fan of that. I think you should have a permit from your home state. I think you should get permits from other states to broaden your ability to carry. But I think that's one reason why you should get licenses from multiple states. The other reason that I'm a big fan of that is that you can stand up and be counted. You know, whenever a state counts the number of people that have concealed carry license, they also count the non-resident licenses. And I think the power in numbers is huge. I think the more people that possess a license, of course, you know, the big argument is we shouldn't have to ask permission from the government to carry our guns, but that is the way it is right now. Let's all accept that, okay? I mean, I'm with you guys when you say that. I don't want you to think I'm not. But that's the system we have right now. So let's live within the system till we can change it. Stand up and be counted. I think everybody should broaden their coverage. You never know where you might travel to. Get some non-resident permits. But Doug, try handgunlaw.us. And he gives you instructions on how to get these non-resident licenses. You might want to check into Tennessee also. He also gives you a listing. You know, let me give an example here. Utah. I think Utah is 31 states. The Utah non-resident license is accepted in 31 states. Tennessee looks like it's accepted in a lot of states as well. So Florida is accepted in a lot of states. And it's why I chose those two. I think between all those three at one time, I could travel to like 39 or 40 states. I need to renew my Florida license. I let that one lapse. I shouldn't have done that. So, Doug, your call has prompted me to send the state of Florida an email or check out what I have to do to renew this one, because I want to possess that. I want to keep that active. I want to renew that and get, you know, possess that. I got to keep practicing what I preach. And so anyway, check that out. That's the best thing that I can tell you to do. And you should definitely do that. I don't know where you're traveling to, but I bet you're going to find one of those non-resident licensed states is going to cover you where you want to go. So when you go to handgunlaw.us, if you look on the left-hand side of the page, it says non-resident permits. And there you'll see a list of all the states right there. And it'll tell you how to get them and where you're covered and all that. Very good instructions. And Gary does a good job of putting all that together. And I find that his information is very accurate. He updates it very regularly, and he's very good about it. He's got a partner that helps him run the site. I think I'm going to send Gary an email, get him back on here, find out what's new over at handgunlaw.us. Hopefully this gives you some good information, Doug. If anybody else has some information as to what are the best states to get, if you think that there's some others out there that are better than Utah and Florida, or if you have some ideas or if you have some experiences as to how you got a non-resident license, call into the voicemail, 210-646-1727. My voicemail number, once again, is 210-646-1727, or you can go to handgunworld.com, and there's a Call Me button on my website. All right, let's take the next voicemail.
Hi, Bob. It's Dan Vamos. I just wanted to say a couple things, really. Number one, you know, our thoughts and prayers are definitely with you. And, you know, God doesn't give us more than we can handle, so you must be one heck of a person, because he's put a lot of weight on your shoulders and your family. So my thoughts and prayers, as well as I know of a lot of this listening audience's thoughts and prayers, are with you. I had a gun question, though, actually, and it's kind of a weird question. I know you don't like the 40 Smith & Wesson cartridge, but it's dealing with that, and maybe you had some input or somebody would. I've noticed with several different platforms, when I've been shooting the 40 Smith & Wesson, I've been getting some failed feeds. And I always wondered about the 40 Smith & Wesson because it has that flat front on it. You know, the ball ammo or full metal jacket isn't really round. It's kind of squared off in the front. And I've been having some issues with that. And I was wondering if that's natural or normal, or if that's an oddball thing that just happens to be something with me and polymer pistols. It's happened with the Glock 23 and now with an M&P 40. So if you could, you know, find out or tell me what you know about that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Bob, we love you. We're praying for you and your family. We're pulling for you. God bless. Have a great day.
Dan, good to hear from you again. I've heard of other people having the same challenge. I'm not sure if it's due to the flat nose of the 40 caliber bullet. It could be. A couple of things I don't know. What kind of ammo are you using? Are you using factory ammo or are you using reloads? What kind of factory ammo are you using? There are some brands of factory ammo that are more prone to jamming. But, you know, you say it's happening in your Glock 23. I don't believe that. Glocks never jam. They're absolutely 100% perfect guns, and they never jam. Oh, I know. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I've seen plenty of Glocks jam. And I've seen plenty of M&Ps jamming, and you're talking about M&Ps as well. Now, be careful now. The 40 caliber, is a stout round. And so I'm not saying you're doing this, but it is very prone to limp wristing. So just be careful. Make sure you got a good, firm, proper grip on that pistol. I'm going to assume that you do. It's possible that your two guns might be 40 caliber ammo finicky. That's possible. So you got to check into that, but try different brands of ammo. See if it does it do it with every brand? Or does it do it with only certain brands? I don't know. You know, now the Smith & Wesson M&Ps were built on the 40 caliber cartridge. So that kind of surprises me a little bit. You know, but every gun jams. Now, you said you've had failures to feed. Well, that could also be caused by other things besides the flat nose of the 40 caliber round. Is your magazine seated properly? Is the gun fairly clean? Are your magazine springs in good shape? You know, that's one thing you got to check. Are your magazine springs in good shape? Have you replaced them lately? You might want to take a couple of your magazines that your jams, that your failure to feeds have been occurring with, and change out the mag springs, clean out the magazine real good, and see if that makes a difference. Try that. How about your extractor? Have you checked your extractor on both of those guns? Is your extractor tuned? If you don't know what I'm talking about, take it to a Glock, take it to a gunsmith. And take both guns to a gunsmith. Take your Glock and your M&P to a gunsmith and ask him to check out the extractor and make sure that the extractor's properly tuned. Although, you know what? That might not cause a failure to feed. That might just cause a failure to extract. You know, But, you know, something to check out anyway. I would say this sounds more to me like it might be a magazine issue, feed ramp issue maybe. Polish the feed ramp real good. I've never had to do that on any of my 9mm Glocks. Maybe you might want to try that on your 40 caliber Glock. Maybe you might want to have a gunsmith polish up that feed ramp real good. You know, make it nice and slick and shiny. Try that. That's what I would probably look into and see if that makes a little bit of a difference. But definitely those magazine springs. And again, what kind of ammo is it? Some people have reported the Federal Champion ammo, 40 caliber, is not so good. That's just what I have learned by teaching people on the range that are using 40 caliber. Also, what grain is it? Is it 40 caliber 165 grain, or is it 40 caliber 180 grain? You know, I don't really care for the 180 grain 40 caliber. If I was going to shoot 40 caliber, I'd stick with 165 grain. It just seems that that works better. And check that out, because the 180 grain flat nose, I don't think that's really what the 40 caliber was supposed to be. I think it was supposed to be a 165 grain bullet. But check that out. Check out what grain. Try a different. Try 165. If it's jamming with 180, try 165. Or if it's jamming with 165, try 180. So that's what I would work on, Dan. First thing I would do is make sure you got good. Your magazine springs are in good shape on all of your magazines that you're using. Maybe I'd get the feed ramp polished a little bit and check out what the weight of your bullet is and change that and work on that. Again, how many failure to feeds are you getting? And are you getting a good firm grip on that pistol? And are you keeping a good firm grip on that pistol? That pistol shouldn't move much in your hand at all. You know what you might want to also do? You might want to also give your gun to somebody else to shoot and give them like four or five full magazines of the same ammo that you say is causing failures to feed. Have someone else, maybe two other people, shoot your gun. See if they can duplicate the same failures to feed. Now, that's a good indicator, because if they can shoot your gun and there's no failures to feed, well, then maybe it tells you it's a little bit about technique. But if they do get some of the same issues, well, then you may have some things that you need to work on both of your pistols. So check that out, Dan. Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate you calling in. Appreciate the thoughts and prayers. And if anybody else has any more information for Dan about using the 40 caliber flat nose bullets, and if you're experiencing some jamming issues or failure to feed issues, please call in. It makes for a good conversation out there. All right, let's go to the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob. Mark Anouf here. I just had another listen to another podcast. Had another comment here. It has to do with the commander size 1911. I don't know if you recall, but I have the commander size 1911 that I usually shoot at your courses and stuff, and I shall be bringing that this weekend when we go to BCC. Hopefully I won't embarrass myself too much. But anyway, there's a couple of things with the differences between the commanders and the 5-inch ones. First of all, the shorter barrel, when you're carrying in waistband behind the hip, if the barrel is a little bit shorter, that's a good thing because it doesn't stick down too far beyond your butt. So when you sit down in a car seat, the front end of the pistol boat doesn't push against the seat that you're sitting on. So that extra inch does make a difference in that respect, for one. And for two, a lot of the times, and this is the case with my pistol, when you get into the commander size, a lot of the manufacturers are leaning towards a not only more compact firearm, but a lighter firearm. And I find that usually the alloy frames, the lighter alloy frames, start with the commanders. I normally don't see them with full-size 1911 frames because it's just assumed that it's full-size steel and that it's, you know, what's the point of trying to save much weight, which I don't necessarily agree with. But anyway, that's another thing, too, is a lot of the time the commanders commander size frames are commonly lighter frames and alloy frames and stuff like that, which, again, is the same thing with mine. But anyway, just a little bit of input from a guy that carries a commander a whole bunch and has tried carrying a full-size 1911, and it's okay. Just, like I said, those things are a whole lot heavier and bulkier than my little alloy frame, the caliber that I take. So, but anyway... just wanted to chime in on that, and we'll keep listening. Cheers, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Now, that's an older voicemail, and actually I've played that on this show before several weeks ago, but I wanted to play it again because he talks about commander size 1911s, and I want to spend some time on commander size 1911s here. It's my favorite type of 1911. I like the commander size. As a matter of fact, my preference is the commander length slide and barrel, and the officer's length grip, commonly called the CCO style of 1911. I like that shorter grip because it fits my hand. I still have enough grip space on there. Some people it doesn't. Some people have to have the full-size grip. I can deal with that little bit shorter grip. And so it's easier to conceal, but I like that commander length barrel. Now, I like it for the same reason that Mark does. If you're carrying behind the hip, if you're a righty, if you're carrying it about 330 or 4, you know, if you're a lefty, if you're carrying it at about 9 o'clock or about 8:30, when you sit down, that's one thing I like. And I do a lot of driving, most of you know. And even though lately I've been going through a lot of cancer treatments and stuff, I'm still doing a significant amount of driving. Shorter trips and things like that, but I'm doing some driving. And one thing that I like about it is it does not, yeah, that's right, the barrel doesn't hit the seat of my car, and then it pushes the pistol up when that happens. When the barrel hits the seat, pushes my pistol up. The shorter barrel, that doesn't happen. I like to appendix carry a lot, and the commander size 1911s are really good for appendix carry. Now, even better yet, are the shorter 3-inch or 3.5-inch 1911s for appendix carry. But, you know, I shy away from those a little bit because they tend to have reliability issues. Now, if you got one that runs good, well, that's great. More power to you. And use that one. But it really, the Commander Size 1911s, I really like the fact that they carry a lot easier, especially in the appendix position. And in my opinion, with the Commander Size, and by the way, for those of you who don't know what that means, it's usually a 4 or 4.25 inch barrel compared to a 5 inch barrel, which is a standard size 1911 length. I don't think the Commander Size 1911s give up that much accuracy, do you? Anybody find that to be true? If you've got a well-made 1911, yeah, you're going to have a little bit of a shorter sight radius with the Commander Size, but you know, if you're a decent shooter, I don't think they give up that much accuracy. Maybe at 25, 30 yards, sure. But how often are we going to take a 25 or a 30-yard shot? And if you practice those, it's like any other gun, even with the polymer service pistols. If you've got a compact one that's got a 4-inch barrel or a 4.25-inch barrel, you practice those 25-yard shots, you can make some good hits at 25 yards. And especially with a 1911 that has a real good trigger, it just takes practice. So I like that. Now, so I'm kind of in agreement with Mark here. I'm very fond of the Commander Size 1911s. I've owned full-size 1911s. The full-size just don't work all that well for me. For me, now. And when I say work, I don't mean that they don't run. They run. It's just that shooting them, I feel better. I also feel like I have better balance. I think the Commander Size 1911s, they balance better. In other words, they're not so front heavy. The full size 5-inch 1911 seemed to be a little front heavy for me. Whereas with the Commander Size, the 4 or 4.25-inch barrel, it balances better, and I like that. And plus, they draw faster. Think about it. How important is speed when you're in a gunfight? It's very important. And coming out of the holster, I think the a little bit smaller gun comes out of the holster faster. I think that's that way with any gun. Doesn't matter if you're shooting a 1911 Commander Size or if you're shooting a compact version of any other gun. They come out of the holster faster. The draw is quicker, and I like that. And it just seems to balance, and the weight of it seems to be better, and I think it's good. Now, with my Sig Sauer RCS 1911, for example, I do give up one round. That's one thing I don't like. That shorter officer's grip, I can only put a 7-round magazine in there. Well, I mean, I could put an 8-round magazine in there, but it's sticking out quite a bit, and then it kind of, to me, defeats the purpose just a little bit of having a smaller grip. Because with that magazine sticking out, it just makes it just a, you know, little defeats the purpose a little bit of having a nice smaller grip. And I like the flush fitting magazine and everything so that it keeps it nice and compact. But so it's a 7-round plus 1 gun. It gets below that 9-round threshold that I like. So that kind of makes me a bit uneasy sometimes. But it is in my carry rotation. It's not something that I carry as often as I carry my Glocks or my M&Ps, but it is in my carry rotation, and I totally love that gun. I totally love that Sig Sauer RCS 1911. It's got that officer-sized grip and the commander length, slightly over 4-inch, 4 1/3-inch barrel, I believe, and totally reliable, great shooter, and there's not very many bad things that I can say about it. So, Mark, you bring up a good point. And they carry well. Those Commander 1911s, they carry well. They're very, very shootable, and you don't give up much. Good voicemail, Mark, and you gave me a chance to talk about that topic, which I've been wanting to do for a while. Okay, at the time of this recording, that's it for the voicemails. But it's going to be a little while before I publish this podcast, so some more voicemails may come in between now and the time that this gets put up. If they don't, I've got some subject matter that I want to talk about. If some more voicemails do come in, you're going to hear them, and you're going to hear my response. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to the next half of the podcast.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA-certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls May 16th and 17th, 2015, from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person, or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
Okay, well, in this second half of the show, I'm actually doing this from my car. And it looks like I got one more voicemail, and then I've got some other subject matter to talk about. So let's get to the next voicemail. This is a real good one. Kevin called this in, and he brought up a real good point.
Hey, Bob. Name's Kevin, and just wanted to mention that we're still praying for you. And, you know, you mentioned in episode 300 that you may have to take a leave of absence. If you do so, we'll be praying for you and waiting for you when you get back. I wanted to bring up one thing. You talked about magazines and carrying spare magazines. You said you thought you'd get hate mail, and that's not what this is. But one thing I thought I'd mention, because I didn't really hear you allude to it, is one of the things I think about with carrying a spare magazine is not that I'm going to run out of ammo and need to reload, but that once I'm done with whatever altercation may have happened or anything that may have happened, not that I'll have a malfunction, but it's a good idea tactically to go ahead and change magazines after whatever happened. One thing I've been told by officers is that if you ever have to use your weapon, you're not going to know how many rounds you fired. There's been officers standing there with a weapon at slide lock, and they're looking down the sights and don't realize it. So I was always taught that tactically it just makes sense to, after an altercation, go ahead and change out your magazine. You know, you've got a fresh one in there. There's no question of how many rounds are left. You've got a fresh full load. Anyway, thought you might find that as an interesting point of view. And enjoy the show, and keep praying for y'all. Thanks.
Okay, Kevin, you are correct. Thank you for calling this in. I forgot about that. This is one of those things I just totally forgot about in the last episode, in episode 300, when I was talking about things that I've learned. Yeah, tactically it makes sense to have a spare magazine. Absolutely. That's a good point. Top it off. Now you got fresh ammo and a full firearm when that altercation is over. Remember, though, you know, there's a 99% chance the cops are going to show up at the scene after you have to use your gun to defend yourself. So the likelihood of you to having to keep shooting and everything is going to be slim. But it makes real good sense to have that spare magazine from a tactical standpoint in case you do have to fight some more. What I was referring to back in episode 300 is all the people that sort of get a false sense of security, thinking that they have more ammunition available for the fight if they need it because they're carrying an extra magazine. All right, you know, so they got 9 in the gun, and they got an extra magazine of 8, and they say, oh, well, I got 17 rounds available. Boy, I don't know. I don't buy into that. I just don't simply buy into that, because the likelihood of you getting a chance to reload during the fight is slim. You know, finding a cover point that's going to be acceptable for you to be able to get behind that cover and reload is slim. It's real slim, based on what we know are the dynamics of a civilian gunfight encounter.
So keep that in mind. And I'm talking about civilian because, after all, I'm a civilian. A lot of you who listen to this are civilians, and we have our concealed carry licenses, and those are the lives that we lead. But, Kevin, this was a good voicemail. Thank you very much. Thank you for the reminder. Once again, folks, if you need to call in a voicemail, it's 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. All right, real quick break, and we'll get on to the next topic.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat at 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
All right, well, for the last half of this episode, or at least the last segment of this episode, I was going to plug in something like an interview or some commentary on some gun stuff that I've seen out there, but I tell you what, a listener has suggested that I do this, and let's see how well it plays out. Again, I always welcome feedback, so you can voicemail me, email me, or whatever you want. But I'm going to spend just a little bit of time talking about how I'm doing in my fight, and maybe this might give you a little inspiration or some inspiration to somebody else. Again, I don't consider myself anybody special. I just consider myself as a person that the good Lord has given me a talent to communicate, and he's given me a vehicle to do it with, which is this podcast. So I'm going to do it and see what happens. Most of you know that since March, I've been fighting off cancer, and I thought it was gone in August. As a matter of fact, I was given a cancer-free proclamation, but it came back, and it came back strong. My lymphoma has entered my central nervous system, which is why I had to have brain surgery in September to remove a tumor. It was back on September 26th, so, you know, not too long ago. But I keep fighting. I keep fighting. I have a fighting spirit. I tell you what, if you follow my Facebook posts, sometimes I don't have a fighting spirit. Sometimes it's hard to keep the faith. Sometimes it's hard to keep fighting, especially when the chemotherapy kicks my butt. I am being set up for a stem cell transplant, an adult autologous stem cell transplant. What that means is I don't need a donor. They're going to use my own stem cells. And there's a very complicated scientific process that they use to harvest the stem cells and then reintroduce them into my body at a special time. And I'll tell you what, folks, it's pretty serious. The stem cell transplant is basically my biggest hope. Now, God is going to have his hands in all of this. I know. He's the great physician, and he's going to have his hands in all of this. But I am using MD Anderson. I'm over at MD Anderson in Houston, Texas. Supposedly one of the best in the world. And also supposedly one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world, in stem cell transplants. So I'm going to be out for quite some time. There's probably going to be about a two-month period where I'm not going to be putting out very many podcasts because it's the stem cell transplant's about a three-month period, about a three-month event, actually. But, you know, if you know somebody that's fighting, I wake up every day, I put my feet on the ground, and I literally say, Lord, thank you for another day, and I'll rejoice and be glad in it. And sometimes it's a tough day, like yesterday was. Sometimes it's a good day, like today is. But I keep trying to fight. I feel like I have a lot to do yet. I feel like I have more people to inspire. I feel like that God has more work for me to do here. Maybe, I don't know, maybe down the road there's going to be some work that he's going to want me to do with cancer patients. I don't know. I've got a family, and of course, you know, my family has challenges. And my wife's battle with her ALS is, it's a battle. It's a battle. She's struggling through some things. She's still functional and doing okay for right now, but she's, you know, we all know what's coming ahead. And boy, I tell you what, me and my family, we've taken a beating. I don't understand sometimes. I scratch my head and I wake up, and this is where I sometimes struggle with my faith. And I ask God, why? You know, why is this happening? And I have to remember we don't always know why. I have to remember that that answer will probably get revealed to me later. When I leave this earthly life and move to my eternal life, I'm sure that probably the question will get answered. But I am a strong person of faith. I know some of you who listen to this don't share my faith. That's okay. I mean, it's not okay. I wish you did, but I'm also not going to look down at you as a person. I don't think that you're any less of a person, and I welcome you as a listener. I welcome you as a listener, whether you have no faith or a different faith than what I have. You're fine. You're a listener, but I wanted to give you my fight. You know, I am a Christian. I believe in the Lord Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. And whatever happens to me going forward is His plan. But I want you to know the fight I'm in. It's a hard one. Oh boy, I tell you what, there's days after chemotherapy I just feel terrible. Terrible. That's why I said in episode 300 that I may have to take some breaks. I may have to take take a leave of absence a little bit from the podcast. I'm itching to get back to the range. I can't, man, it's been so long since I've been out at the range. And I'm hoping I get to go up to Dallas this weekend and teach pistol fighting dynamics with Ben. I'm supposed to be there as his co-instructor. By the time you hear this podcast, that class will be over. But again, a lot of it's going to be dependent on how I feel and blood test results and things like that and what the doctor thinks and all that. With all that said, folks, I really appreciate all the encouragement you've been giving me. As you know, I'm going to keep doing this podcast as long as I can. This is therapy for me. And I'm going to try to keep as much of a positive attitude as I can, but I am a human being, and I'll be quite frank and upfront and honest with you. I'm a human being, and sometimes I get down. And so your encouragement, I want you to know, sometimes your encouragement makes a huge, huge difference for me. Your prayers make a big difference for me and my family. Please keep them coming. All right? So there's a little segment about how I'm doing and what I'm wrestling with and so forth. And I, you know, it was a request. A listener made a request to me that I periodically, maybe not every episode, but periodically tell people how I'm doing and things. So there you go. There's my update. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and conclude episode 301 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob May, and I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. And by the way, don't forget to support my show. This is a commercial-free podcast, so I get support only from listeners. Either sign up for a class, join the Shooters Club, buy something off of my Amazon link, and whatever. I've mentioned that in a lot of past podcasts, and I won't go into that in depth right now, but it's out there. I'd appreciate your support. The website, handgunworld.com. And with all that, I'm going to go ahead and sign off, and I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.